All right, guys, welcome to the show. So today, I got a bunch of stuff for you, including we didn't get to this story yesterday, but it's the Marjorie Taylor Greene theory on God punishing us. Hang in there for that. We'll get to a hilariously embarrassing story about Lauren Boebert. She was incredibly drunk, and she was at a Young Republicans gala, and she was annoying the shit out of Trump so much that security had to intervene. Oh, it's so glorious. I love that story so much. Then we get RFK Jr. comes out and says the classic dumb old guy shit about what's causing mass shootings. And later on, I got to give you an amazing story about what percentage of young new billionaires are self-made. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. I promise you will. And then we have an absolutely genocidal Fox News host who lets it all hang out on the air. So we got all that and more. Everybody do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. Helps out big time in the algorithm. Doesn't cost you anything. And let's dive into it. So let's start with this here. Trump secretly held talks with the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Former President Donald Trump had a recent discussion with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. I'm going to get to at the end what I think it's about, because there's a lot of speculation around this. According to the New York Times, it was unclear what the two men discussed and whether it was their only conversation since Mr. Trump's departure from the White House. There's no way that that's the case. Neither representatives for Mr. Trump nor an official of the Saudi government responded to requests for comment, but news of their discussion comes at a time when the Biden administration is engaged in delicate negotiations with the Saudis aimed at establishing a lasting peace in the Middle East. Oh, please. Building on diplomatic ties between Israel and a number of Arab states forged through the work of the Trump administration. This comes amid suspicion that the Saudi government intends to work against Biden's reelection. It also comes as a major Saudi real estate developer has inked a deal with the Trump organization for a villa and golf project worth $4 billion. All right, we're going to come back to that in a minute. And by the way, do you think that should be allowed? Do you think that should be legal? Homie's running for president, and he's in the midst of a $4 billion deal with the government of Saudi Arabia. Doesn't that make it incredibly likely that no matter what happens, in every imaginable circumstance, Trump's going to have their back? They continue, Mr. Trump has other reasons to maintain warm relations with Prince Mohammed. The former president and Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and former senior White House advisor, established close ties with the crown prince while in office and have capitalized on that goodwill in their private businesses since leaving government. Saudi Arabia was the first stop on Mr. Trump's first foreign trip as president, a sign of the value Mr. Trump placed on the relationship. Mr. Trump pursued major deals with the Saudis, including arms sales, and he defended Prince Mohammed at his moment of greatest international pressure after the CIA concluded that the crown prince had ordered the killing of the dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Meanwhile, the report said Mr. Kushner has benefited from Prince Mohammed's support on an even larger scale. Only 6 months after leaving government, Kushner's investment firm secured $2 billion from Saudi Arabia. Okay, so now the question comes up, well, what the fuck were they talking about? If it's a secret meeting, Trump said nothing about it, the Saudi government said nothing about it, they tried to keep it on the low, but they had the meeting. So what was likely discussed? Well, there's a few things. First of all, they point out that there's currently a $4 billion golf project in the works, probably a new Trump course in Saudi Arabia. I'm sure he's getting massive, massive subsidies from the Saudi government to do that. Look, Mohammed bin Salman is ruthless and vicious and a war criminal, but he's also smart. And what he's trying to do is buy favor with the U.S. president by getting into so many business deals with him and forking over so much money. So right off the bat, definitely this project they could have discussed. The other thing is, guys, Trump is already getting at the very least tens of millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia because the breakaway LIV golf tour is completely Saudi funded. And a lot of these events are happening at Donald Trump golf courses. So they just had an event in Miami the other day. And I'm sure Trump gets paid millions and millions every time one of these events is at one of his courses. And they've been at a number of his courses. So it could be the tens of millions Trump is getting through LIV. It could be the $2 billion deal that Jared Kushner had. It could be this new $4 billion golf deal that they're working on together. By the way, are you noticing a trend here? Are you noticing how close they are? The other thing it could be, and this is honestly a worst-case scenario, but it's something to definitely keep in mind, is that Saudi Arabia holds tremendous control over gas, oil and gas prices because they can adjust the supply and change the price massively. They can make it drop a lot. They can make it go up a lot. And so the fear and the concern, and this has been around for a year or two now, is this notion that if the Saudis prefer Donald Trump over Biden, as much as it looks like they do, well, then what's to stop them as we get closer to the election from fucking with the supply and massively increasing gas prices? And then people will look at the gas prices. I mean, they can make it be unaffordable, right? They could double it, triple it. And then everybody's going to turn around and blame Joe Biden in the U.S. and say, well, you're the president. Fucking fix it. Why are gas prices so bad? But look, we will know if this was one of the things that Trump discussed with Saudi Arabia, colluding with a foreign theocracy to take out your political opponent. We will know if that's the case because you will have the gas prices shoot through the roof. And Saudi Arabia will act on behalf of Trump. Now, we can't speculate this far out. We don't have enough evidence or proof that this is definitely going to happen. But if it does happen, we 100% will know. It will be the most obvious thing in the world. And it will be foreign meddling in our electoral process. By the way, everybody made a big deal about Russiagate. And oh my God, Trump's Putin's puppet and all that stuff. All that was nonsense. The real concern, and it's an actual concern, this one's not made up, Israeli interference and Saudi interference. They control so much of U.S. politics. They are colossally well-funded lobbies. And you'd be surprised how cheap it is to buy a lot of these politicians. So by the way, why do you think it is that Donald Trump didn't even do a little slappy-slappington on the wrist when Saudi Arabia murked Jamal Khashoggi and chopped him up into little bits and pieces? Why do you think that is? Why do you think they just took the side of Saudi Arabia? Well, you know why. Because we got a $2 billion handed directly to Jared Kushner from Mohammed bin Salman. By the way, oh, fuck. There was one other thing that I forgot. Oh, yeah. Jared Kushner allegedly shared classified information with Mohammed bin Salman. So there could have been a direct quid pro quo, tit for tat, because Mohammed bin Salman overruled his own advisors and said, no, we're going to give Jared Kushner the money. They didn't want to give it to him. He was like, no, we're going to do it. So could it be that that was payback for seeing classified information on his enemies, right? So there's a lot going on here, man. But $4 billion deal now for a golf project with Trump, already giving tens of millions through the LIV Golf Tour, $2 billion for Jared Kushner. And, you know, the next step could very well be you're going to fuck with the gas prices, right, to get me back in there. Because Saudi Arabia has a tremendous amount of power, where if they double the gas prices leading into the into Election Day and voters blame Biden, yeah, it's very possible they'll pick Trump. So a secret meeting with this dictator is unacceptable. Remember back when Trump ran in 2015, 2016, and he was very clear, like, Saudi Arabia did 9/11. They did 9/11. They're extremists. Now look at them. Now look at him. You never should have bought the notion that Trump, oh my God, he's not corrupt. He's self-funded. He wasn't self-funded, and he is corrupt. He took $100 million from Sheldon Adelson on two separate occasions and then changed policy for Sheldon Adelson, moved the embassy, the Israeli embassy, to Jerusalem, which really pissed off Palestinians and Hamas and in part led to October 7th. Again, the Abraham Accords, massive middle finger to Palestinians. This is all stuff that far-right Zionists wanted, and he catered to them because they paid him, right? And who else is paying him? The Saudis. They're going to get what they want. Donald Trump will not make decisions based on the American people. He'll make it based on his donors. And that's the final thing is it possible Trump was talking to Mohammed bin Salman to try to get bailed out of his legal woes, to have Mohammed bin Salman pay the $464 million fine? Is that possible? That, you know, he makes a deal with him like, hey, man, you help me pay off my $464 million fine, and whatever you want when I'm in the White House, you'll get it. Literally none of the possibilities are good of Trump having a secret meeting with this guy. None of the possibilities. Terrifying. All right, y'all. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is Marjorie Taylor Greening, as you're about to see. She has a theory here on the earthquake that New York had the other day. And I wasn't there, by the way. I'm happy I wasn't there because that would terrify the shit out of me. But there was an earthquake the other day, solar eclipse as well. Let me show you what she said. This is special. This is special. So she tweeted, God is sending America strong signs to tell us to repent. Earthquakes and eclipses and many more things to come. I pray that our country listens. This person is an elected official. That's amazing to me. She's an elected official. And she has the IQ of a mosquito. Okay, I love the community note here. There are approximately 1,700 earthquakes in the U.S. every year. About four a day. To be fair, most of these earthquakes are way more minor than the one that hit the other day. The one that hit the other day was pretty fucking beefy. But yeah, earthquakes happen all the goddamn time. And Taiwan had one before that. Does Taiwan need to repent? Like, what are we talking about? And then it says, solar eclipses occur approximately every 18 months and are able to be predicted well in advance. Put the God thing aside for a second. Even lumping together earthquakes, which is like a natural disaster, with a solar eclipse? That's not a natural disaster. Like, nothing negative comes from the eclipse. If anything, it's this cool event. Why would you put these together? And why would you act like... I think she genuinely thinks that an eclipse is, like, something that's not predictable and is bad, right? Like, oh my God, there's an eclipse coming. Bitch, that's not like a hurricane or a tornado or an earthquake. It's this cool event. She's so stupid. She's so stupid. Guys, she wrote this tweet out and hit send. It's one thing to have a thought that dumb. It's another thing to write it down and then delete it before hitting send. It's on a whole nother level to type it out and then hit send on this bitch. God is sending America strong signs to tell us to repent. Earthquakes and eclipses and many more things to come. I pray that our country listens. This is like when, remember when, what was it? I think it was after Hurricane Katrina or something. Pat Robertson said that God was pissed at us because there's like gay pride parades in New Orleans. How are you supposed to get through to people like this? It's so many layers removed from reason that I wouldn't even know where to begin. It's like, okay, first of all, Marjorie, an earthquake is bad, yes, but an eclipse is not bad. Second of all, these things happen all the time. No matter what. It's not like countries that have a very large religious population don't have any natural disasters. They have plenty, I'm sure, on average, just as much as anybody else. And also, what a fucked up God this would be, right? If it's like, you're not paying me enough attention, so I'm going to destroy everything. Is that a God you really want to worship? Is that like vengeful, ruthless, petty God somebody you really want to worship? Apparently, her answer is yes. But also, they're confused, like, their God, Jesus, is like a hippie communist, but then also when they talk about him like this, it's like, this is anything but a hippie communist. This is like a ruthless, vindictive, dictatorial asshole. I don't even know where to begin with this, man. I really don't. But the year's 2024, and people like this are still representing Americans. It's embarrassing. I honestly thought, naively, that we were past the whole, like, something bad happened. We got to get right with God. It's like, how is this any different from trying to make a prediction by reading the entrails on a chicken? Right? Like, how's that any different? But this is where we are. This is where we are. So, Marjorie, thanks for the lols. One more point I wanted to make. That if we're taking this argument at face value, that God is mad at us, so he's sending earthquakes and eclipses, he's mad at us. Well, Marjorie, the epicenter of the earthquake was at Trump National Golf Club in New Jersey. So by your own logic, is like Donald Trump the one who needs to repent the most? Is he the one God is most mad at? Because the earthquake hit his golf course. That's where it was the worst. Now, I'm sure if you bring this up, this wouldn't change her mind one iota. Even though she's the one who said God is mad, sending the earthquakes, doing the eclipse, etc. Well, if that was true, he's most mad at Donald Trump. That would be undeniable. But I'm sure she won't even engage with that fact because she's a fucking moron. So we just talked about Marjorie Taylor Greene blaming sin for us having earthquakes and an eclipse. It's just so stupid. Well, we got another embarrassing story. These two were, they despise each other, but the reason they despise each other is because they're far too similar. So New York Post is reporting that Lauren Boebert was drunk as fuck at a young Republicans gala. She was so drunk that she was cut off by the bartender. And apparently she was annoying the shit out of Donald Trump for selfies. Here's what they say. Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert reportedly got so drunk at a Republican gala in the Big Apple, she had to be cut off by bartenders. But witnesses denied the allegation to the Post. Now, by the way, assuming this is true, you're a grown-ass woman, and you're a congressperson. And you still need to be cut off by the bartender? Like, Jesus Christ, this has massive, like, college frat boy alcoholic energy. The controversial congresswoman's apparently boozy turn at the New York Young Republicans annual event in December also included her bothering former President Donald Trump for so many selfies. His security stepped in to stop her. Several at the servers at the event, which was held in the Cipriani Ballroom, told Boebert they wouldn't bring her any more booze. I guess here are pictures from that event. Boebert sat at the gala's marquee table and was joined by Steve Bannon, Florida GOP Representative Corey Mills, and club president Gavin Wax, and Trump, among others. Boebert was not cut off from alcohol, insiders told the Post Saturday, but she had irritated Trump during the event. So we're getting conflicting reports here. Some people said she was cut off. Others say she wasn't cut off, but the story about annoying the shit out of Trump is true. Quote, she came over between Gavin Wax and President Trump and tried to take a selfie with the two of them. After taking a few and being unhappy with how they looked, she tried to take more selfies, but she was pushed away by President Trump, who said, "That's enough." Wow. Boebert declined to comment. In a statement, New York Young Republican Club President Gavin Wax said, "Everyone knows the New York Young Republican Club throws the best galas. If you're asking if Congresswoman Boebert had a good time at one of our galas, the answer is I hope so." Here's another picture from the event. Apparently, I love this. So when the night was over, there was a little group of them that decided to keep the party going. After the festivities wrapped, the Colorado Republican partied into the wee hours at the Upper East Side's Beach Cafe with House colleague Representative Byron Donalds and disgraced former GOP Representative George Santos. So those three, George Santos, Lauren Boebert, and Byron Donalds, they're like, fuck it, let's go to the club, bro. Oh my god, I would love to know what happened the rest of that night. I would love to know what happened. I could see George Santos doing cocaine at a New York club. I could see Byron Donalds trying to get it in with Lauren Boebert's hoochie ass. like, there's no doubt some weird shit went on that night. It's far from the congresswoman's first bout with public controversy. In September, Boebert was asked to leave a production of Beetlejuice after she engaged in some excessive public displays of affection. That was when she was kissing her man and trying to, like, jack him off. Remember that? I respect that one. I respect the giving your man some hand love in person. So shout out to Boebert on that one. But man, how embarrassing is it? You are a congresswoman. Maybe not, you got cut off. I'll remain agnostic on that one, right? You have conflicting reports. But where there's no conflicting reports is she annoyed the shit out of Trump by taking too many selfies, and Trump had to push her away and say, "That's enough," and the security had to get involved. Wow. Is your representative, man. This is a Colorado district. This is who is representing you in Congress. Like, I do think in the era of, like, social media and its rise, I do feel like there is a degree of seriousness with these people that just doesn't, it's gone. Right? Like, back in the day, the conservatives and the Republicans and the intellectuals, like, they were all assholes, right? It's not like William F. Buckley was a good guy. No, he was a piece of shit. But there was at least some aura of professionalism about him, right? Like, this is a serious person. whether or not you agree with him. He's relatively serious, buttoned up. But you look at this and you're like, where the fuck are they finding these people? Where are you finding Lauren Boebert? Where are you finding Marjorie Taylor Greene? Where are you finding these trashy hoes who are worship at the altar of Trump and they're taking 1,000 selfies with him to the point where they annoy the shit out of him? Anyway, there you go. We're in a healthy place as a country. That's what I get from this. So RFK Jr. Is out there on the campaign trail, I guess you can say. He's still trying to get on a whole bunch of ballots. He wants to be the independent candidate for this election. Cornel West is also running as an independent. Look, I got to be honest. I don't know how many ballots he's actually going to end up getting on because it's an incredibly onerous process. It's different state by state. It's almost certainly the case he won't get on every ballot. It's likely I don't even know if he'll get on half, to be honest with you. We'll see. Look, he would impress me if he gets on like over half of the ballots. But either way, he's running. Some polls have him as high as 15%. Will he actually end up getting that? I kind of doubt it. The best third-party candidate independent run in modern history was Ross Perot, and I think he got like 19% of the vote, but he ended up not even getting one electoral college vote. So functionally, he will end up serving as just a spoiler, assuming he gets on the ballots, okay? So, but he's out there. He's making his case. He's doing his thing. And he made a comment the other day that this is one of the classic, like, old school comments that drives me fucking crazy. It's something I've been hearing my whole life. It's about, well, what do you blame for mass shooting? He goes right to, like, the old boomer ass, just, like, shoot from the hip, intuitive talking points as to what he thinks is to blame. Let's watch and we'll break it down.
We've always had abundance of guns in this country in the past. 20 years, there's been no per capita increase in the amount of guns we have. And yet these killings, these mass killings have exploded. And we need to look at other reasons for that as well, a potential reason. NIH has not studied the etiology or the cause of gun violence since 1996. And NIH needs to be studying them to see if there's connections to some of the SSRI and psychiatric drugs people are taking, whether there's connections to video games.
So he's trying to say, yeah, guns, we've got a lot of guns, but we've always had a lot of guns. So don't look at the guns. Don't look at the guns. You know, hey, maybe it's SSRIs or video games. Oh, for the love of Christ, man. This is like the 17th time on this show we've had to go over this. So Trump suggested a while ago that video games are to blame for mass shootings. Researchers have long sought links between real-world violence and bloody video games. Quote, we found a whole lot of nothing, said one expert. So this, just to be clear, this is not the only study that has come to this conclusion. There are a number of studies that have looked into violent video games and if they cause violence. And the takeaway is absolutely not. There's no link at all. There are some countries that play more video games and more violent video games than we play here. And they have like a fraction of the mass shootings. So on that alone, it's like, what are we really talking about here? It turns out if you're playing like Call of Duty or something, you know you're playing a video game. You know you're not shooting real people. It's not like if you go play Call of Duty or Rainbow Six, or I don't even know what the new ones are because I'm ancient as fuck, that you'll be like, you know, I really want to kill my neighbor now. That doesn't happen. Come on, man. Like, what are we doing here? But okay, but then the other point. Well, I think it's the, it could be the psychiatric medication. They've also studied this. So there was a thing that went viral in 2023, a post that tried to blame school shootings on antidepressants. The claim was that 90% of school shootings were linked to antidepressants. And it was a March 30th Instagram post. Psych meds linked to 90% of school shootings. The body of the article says some 90% of school shootings over more than a decade have been linked to a widely prescribed type of antidepressant called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs. Okay, here's what they say. This is in USA Today. Researchers have not found any link between antidepressants and school shootings. Available studies suggest a minority of school shooters were prescribed medication, prior to committing their crimes. Experts found no causal link between shooters and medication. The shooter who killed three children and three staff members at a Nashville elementary school on March 27th was being treated for an emotional disorder before the attack, according to local police. This revelation led some social media users to blame mental illness and even medication for school shootings. The post shared on Instagram focuses on SSRIs, but Dr. Ray Gurgis, an associate professor of clinical psychiatry at the Columbia University Department of Psychiatry and the lead researcher of a 2022 study on mass murders, told USA Today, there's no evidence of a link between medication and shootings. SSRIs and psych meds in general are not responsible for mass shootings or violence in any way. Not only are a small minority of mass shooters taking therapeutic doses of these medications at the time of the mass shootings, but these psych meds have specific anti-violence properties. So in other words, the problem is much more likely to be that these motherfuckers who are doing the shootings are not on SSRIs. They're not on psychiatric medication. They're not doing therapy. They're not addressing any underlying problems that they may have for a propensity to violence. If you understand the way these antidepressants work, the layman's description of it is, me no have enough happy chemicals in brain. Me add more happy chemicals to make me more normal and be okay. Like, that's the gist of it. Hey, something's off chemically, so let me take a pill to bring my chemicals back to homeostasis and a baseline that is reasonably happy. Like, that's the whole idea. There's serotonin, there's dopamine, there's all these different, like, happiness chemicals, and people who are depressed have a deficiency in that. And so it is much more likely, if you give somebody an antidepressant, that they won't commit violence. So the ironic thing is, they have it, like, totally backwards. Even in the instances where some people were prescribed one of these things and they do a mass shooting, it is much more likely they weren't taking their pills, and that led them to act deranged and then go do something very, very bad. They say what that means is that if a mass murderer happens to be taking a psychiatric medication, the medication was probably incidental, as is nearly all mental illness when present among mass murders. Look, the bottom line is, this argument that's being made, oh, it's the video games, oh, it's the pills, it is a total distraction from the reality of the situation. And the reality of the situation is, in this country, we have more guns than people. Okay, we are absolutely drowning in firearms. And it just so happens, when you have that many guns, there are more shootings. It just is, right? It's a tautology to point out, if you don't have guns, you can't do mass shootings, right? Now you might say, hey, Kyle, I don't want to live in a society where there's like zero guns. Fair enough. I actually happen to agree with you. I don't want to have 350 million, and I don't want to have zero. I want somewhere in the middle there. But take, like, Japan, for example. They have virtually no guns, and they have virtually no shootings. What a shock, right? No, it's not surprising at all. Here's the reality. If what the conservatives said is true, we'd already be the most peaceful country in the world, because they say more guns equals more peace. The more firearms you have, the good guys outnumber the bad guys, so the good guys keep the bad guys in check. That's the way the argument goes. We've heard it 1,000 times over. But if that was true, we would already have the fewest shootings in this country compared to any other country. No, it turns out, since we have the most guns, we have the most shootings. And if you give any country the number of guns that we have, there'd also be more violence there, right? So in my opinion, the answer is not to say nobody can have a gun under any circumstances, or everybody and their mother should have a gun. The answer is somewhere in the middle. I like the base, you know, universal background checks. You can't have a gun if there's criminal history, ban on high-capacity magazines, you should have a little test in order to prove that you're responsible enough to have it, et cetera, et cetera. I like the basic regulations. But to try to say, don't at all look at the guns, but it's the SSRIs and it's the video game, that's just wrong. Like, you're just wrong. Those things are not a problem. They're not even close to a problem. So let's stop pretending. And by the way, you are scapegoating, like, people who play video games. They didn't bother anybody. They didn't do anything to anybody. They're just playing video games. Fuck off. Let them live. Right? Also, trying to stigmatize the taking of psychiatric medication is like an attempt to make fewer people take psychiatric medication, when that's a bad idea. You know, I know plenty of people in my own life who take these things, and they've been a fucking game changer. Okay? They've improved their lives dramatically. It gets you to the point where, hey, before I didn't even want to get out of bed to go through the day. Now I have the energy to get out of bed and then do other things that might make me feel better, like exercise and eat right or whatever it might be. So it's just fucking boomer brain just spewing nonsense. Nothing wrong with video games. Nothing wrong with the antidepressants. In fact, in these instances that there are mass shootings and they were prescribed these pills, it's a minority, first of all. But second of all, it's likely that the people who were prescribed it weren't even taking it, and they were more likely to do violence as a result of that. It turns out when you put more happy chemicals in your brain, you're happier and less likely to kill people. Not exactly rocket science. So we've been told about 1,000 times over, if you've grown up in this country, that, look, the harder you work, the further you go. It's a meritocracy, right? So put in the work, and there will be results. And it will pay off in the end. Now, look, if I'm raising a kid and I'm talking to them, is that something that I'm going to tell them? Like, hey, you should always try your hardest. You should always do your best. And then hopefully that pays off. Absolutely. That's just like basic, human advice that any reasonable person would say, just to build character, right? Just to make people feel like, it's a reasonable enough system and you can navigate your way through it by being honest and disciplined and hardworking enough. So I absolutely would give that advice to people just as a general rule of thumb for being a human being, right? Like that's advice I give myself. Hey, work harder, better things will come, right? But let's be clear about one very important part of this. The idea that we live in some sort of a pure meritocracy. The idea that everything is as straightforward as like sports, for example, where, hey, it's like, may the best man or the best woman win. We're going to have some refs here who do their best to be neutral and objective. And it's just whoever plays best ends up winning. The idea that all of life is like that and the economy is like that and the job market is like that is not remotely true, right? That is horrifically incorrect. So we have a new story here that really, really highlights this. None of Forbes' billionaires under 30 are self-made for the first time in 15 years. Let me repeat that. None of these new young billionaires are self-made. So here's what they say. Their bank accounts are stacked with family money. For the first time since 2009, none of those who made Forbes' list of billionaires under 30 generated their massive wealth on their own. This year, 18 of the 25 youngest on the world's billionaires list inherited their wealth. The statistic is partly due to past self-made billionaires aging into their 30s and not getting replaced by others in the same financial situation. The Business Magazine reported in an article titled World's Youngest Billionaires 2024, the hefty inheritances are also the start of what the outlet calls a long-anticipated generational wealth transfer. Trillions are expected to change hands every year as the affluent elderly pass away and leave their fortunes to descendants. The title of youngest billionaire in the world goes to 19-year-old Livia Voigt of Brazil. The college student, who has a net worth of $1.1 billion, has a minority stake in her late grandfather's electrical equipment production company, WEG. She was accompanied on the list by her older sister, Dora, 26 years old. A pair of 20-something billionaire brothers from Ireland, who also made the list, Zehan and Firoz Mistry, are estimated to have a net worth of a staggering $4.9 billion each. The duo, who are 25 and 27, are the sons of the late Cyrus Mistry, a former chairperson of India's largest conglomerate, the Tata Group. Each got a minor stake in the company after their grandfather died in 2022. In 2022, Clemente Del Vecchio, 19, of Italy, earned a stake in Essilor Luxottica, the Italian-French maker of Ray-Ban, after his dad, Leonardo Del Vecchio, died. He now has a net worth of $4.7 billion, along with his brothers, Leonardo Maria, 28, and Luca, 22. The German heiress to eyewear company, Fielmann AG, Sophie Luce Fielmann, 29, who is worth $2.7 billion, received the fortune that her father, Gunther Fielmann, left to her after he died in January. Ladies and gentlemen, we just gave a number of examples of people who were just lucky to be part of the good sperm club. It's not even the good sperm club. It's the lucky sperm club. Through random fucking chance and happenstance, your ass happened to have a fucking loaded family, dog. So one day the old man croaks and now you got $4 point something billion. $4 point something billion. Is there anybody who can defend this system? Is there anybody who thinks this system is reasonable? Because look, it's the conservatives who tell us all the time about the value of hard work to get ahead. We don't want any fucking welfare queens and parasites in these parts. I found your welfare queens. I found your parasites. I found your people who provide absolutely nothing of material value, but have everything in the world that they could ever want. More money than they could ever spend. And by the way, a bunch of these people will fucking spend that. They'll buy 3 yachts, 4 mansions. Like this, we've seen this story time and time again. This is what happens, right? Is that the son or the daughter or the grandson or the granddaughter of somebody who's wealthy and successful and maybe did put in at least some work to get to where they were, they end up blowing through the money. They end up living lives of hedonism and debauchery. Lord only knows. Now, look, I don't know these people individually, but the fact of the matter is this. In my opinion, should they be able to inherit $2.7 billion, $4.6 billion, or however much each of them are inheriting? Some of these motherfuckers are 19 years old, 26 years old, whatever the case may be. Do I look at that and go, hey, yeah, God bless, move forward? No. No, not at all. It was actually Bill Maher who said this a long time ago, and it stuck with me. There's nobody better to tax in a society than rich dead people. And here we have, now I don't know the countries these people lived in, it's different person for person or whatever, but the idea that they just take in all that money, sorry, man. I'll go further. I'm not even in favor of a percentage, right? Like, oh, you take 50% and call it a day. I'm not even in favor of a percentage. I'm in favor of like, let them max out at inheriting like $20 million, right? You got to, let's say some asshole's worth $6 billion, $7 billion. Can the kids be beneficiaries of that to one extent or another? Yeah, sure. I'll let you keep $20 million. I'll let you keep $20 million. You should be thanking me. Because what else should we do with that money? Fucking everything which is obvious. Give people healthcare. Give people an education. Give people, I don't know, maybe a UBI program to make sure people can take care of the basics and get ahead in life and give themselves a chance at making it. There's a million things. Rebuild the roads and the bridges and all, like, are you kidding me? If we had a society that taxed billionaires the way that we should tax billionaires, we have all the funds we need, as far as the eye can see, to take care of the basics in that society. But instead, we don't have that. So look, they didn't work for it. They didn't earn it. They're just lucky to be the sons or daughters of wealthy people, the lucky sperm club, right? You tell me why it shouldn't be the exact opposite of the situation we're looking at right now. Because I can't come up with a reason why I'm wrong on this. And if anything, you could say, hey, Kyle, you're being too kind. You say you want to leave them $20 million each? That's more money than... That's a lot of fucking money. They could live the rest of their lives without having to do anything. Well, okay. I'll grant you that... I'll grant you a little bit of favor for being in the Lucky Sperm Club, but only enough where we have the rest of that money can be used for good. Right? Because you might watch this and say, $10 million is the max, or $1 million is the max that they should get. Right? I'm being kind by saying 20. But, you know, you just can't, when you look at a system like we have now, you just can't wrap your mind around this being okay. We've all covered the Oxfam numbers, and it gets worse and worse every year. The report from, like, whatever it was, 5 years ago, was like, the wealthiest 28 people have more wealth than the bottom 50% of the world combined. So 28 people have more than, like, 3 billion people combined. And that's the old number. Now it's probably, like, the wealthiest 12 people. You just can't, like, you can't justify that by saying, oh, the people who have that, they just work the hardest. Because that's not true. There's plenty of people who bust their ass and have poverty wages. Why should we be okay with them inheriting billions, but then people working full time and have poverty wages? That system makes no sense. So you guys tell me what you think about this, but it's quite a fact. None of the Forbes billionaires under 30 are self-made. None. None. Now, this piqued my interest, and I was like, hold on. I used to know a number off the top of my head as to what percentage of wealthy people are quote-unquote self-made, right? So I went, did some digging. Study shows only 27% of wealthy Americans are self-made. 27%. Now, look, you can debate and argue over, well, what actually constitutes wealthy? Where's that line? And reasonable people can disagree on where they think the line is for somebody being wealthy, right? But at least according to this study, they say 27% of wealthy Americans are self-made. Over a quarter of ultra-rich Americans did not inherit any money at all. 70% of Americans who hold more than $3 million are over 56 years old. And they talk about investing. Here's the part I wanted to show you. 27% of the ultra-wealthy are self-made. So about a quarter of the ultra-wealthy are self-made. It defines them as people with a middle-class or poor upbringing and no inheritance. That's only a quarter of the wealthy ones. Those are the ones who I have the most sympathy for. The ones who I think, okay, you know what I'm saying? 46% have a head start. So about half of them, almost half the super rich people surveyed, either had some inherited wealth or an affluent upbringing. And 28% have legacy wealth. People with both an affluent background and inherited money. Now, again, the devil's in the details, right? The specifics. How much did they inherit, etc.? Like, you'd have to do a much more complex analysis to get to the root of this. But this is certainly hand in hand. It's consistent with the number I used to know, which I have since forgot, of it was either like millionaires that inherited money or billionaires that had inherited money. Bottom line is, it takes a lot of factors that go into being wealthy. And one of the ones that helps the most is just generational wealth, inheritance. You know, and we pretend like that's not the case. And it's so funny that the conservatives and the Republicans who make this argument about, like, we don't want to have any social safety net programs, because then people get addicted to those social safety net programs and they'll never pull themselves up by their bootstraps. You know, if you feed them once, they'll keep coming back and asking for more instead of working themselves. Right? Like, that's the argument we hear. But they only make that argument vis-a-vis poor people and working class people. When it comes to the wealthy, they flip their perspective completely. They flip it completely. When it comes to wealthy people, they're like, yeah, you should be able to pass on all of your money, no taxes at all. And even if you've never worked a day in your life, here's $10 billion. There's no consistency in that. And it's really fucking stupid. So anyway, we don't live in a meritocracy. It's not the harder you work, the further you go. And as a direct result of that, it's incumbent upon us to try to make the system better. Actually give people equal opportunity. Give people social safety net programs that allow them to take care of the basics and make it so they can get ahead. They can do half decent. Not have some people who can't fucking pay the light bill, can't pay the water bill, don't have enough food to eat, don't have health insurance, and other people, this asshole just inherited $6 billion. Spare me. So the psychos over at Fox News are pissed off at Biden, not for arming, funding, enabling a wholesale ethnic cleansing and genocide in Gaza. No, they're mad at him because every now and then he says some things like, hey, war crimes are bad. Hey, don't kill civilians or humanitarian workers. This is why they get mad at him. This is why they yell and scream. So here we have the perfect case in point. Mark Levin, who's probably one of the single most annoying political commentators in the world. He's got that nasally Ted Cruz-like voice, and he thinks he's an intellectual, but he's just really pissed off all the time and dead wrong. He's going to do this this long diatribe against Biden. And you'll see the core of his argument, and it is not pretty.
What is society about? It's good versus evil, isn't it? forces of good, forces of evil, constantly clashing?
You know, I'm torn on that question. Is it good versus evil? I think that's kind of a simplistic notion of reality. But to the extent what he's saying is true, it's good versus evil in the exact opposite way he thinks it is. The ones he think are good, he thinks are good or evil. The one that he thinks are evil are good. But anyway, I digress. Let's keep going.
And who's going to win? This election is about good versus evil. And I'm going to make the case.
The election is about evil versus more evil. Like that's what it's about.
Just part of it. That electing Joe Biden is electing evil. Evil. Not just a radical leftist, not just a buffoon, not just Obama staffers, but evil. And we're going to start with...
It says everything about Mark Levin that he thinks it's fair to call Biden a radical leftist. Like, by no definition of leftism is he a radical leftist. He's not even a leftist. Like, what are we talking about? He's like a center-right neoliberal status quo defender with minor tweaks. That's kind of wordy, but I think you get the point.
Obviously, this week, as you're well aware, as the whole world is aware, as Biden and Blinken and the rest have made aware, the Israelis, while defending themselves against an unprovoked terrorist horrendous attack, has been fighting like hell for 6 months in its longest war in history. And the other day, they accidentally took out a convoy of trucks, seven trucks, which had civilians.
Accidentally, Mark says. They accidentally did it. They accidentally bombed the vehicles that had the giant World Central Kitchen logo on the top after the World Central Kitchen had given the IDF exactly where they were going to go and at what time they were going to go there. They accidentally bombed them. I can't take guys like this seriously because he either knows that's a lie or he's the biggest fucking idiot on the planet.
Civilians who were bringing food and medicine into Gaza. And Joe Biden, Anthony Blinken, and this guy Kirby, they immediately went to the microphones. I think, in fact, Blinken was in Europe for a NATO meeting, trashing Israel. Trashing Israel.
Yeah, why would you trash Israel after they massacred humanitarian aid workers on purpose? Why would you do that? You're supposed to praise Israel after they do war crimes. When they do a war crime, you go, hooray, Israel, yay, more war crimes.
Something that they didn't mean to happen, and they apologized for and independently investigating. Biden said in part...
Well, that settles it. They apologized after they killed seven aid workers. They apologized after killing 15,000 children. They apologized after killing 36,000 innocent people. No harm, no foul. We're good.
I'm outraged and heartbroken by the deaths of seven humanitarian workers from World Central Kitchen, including one American in Gaza yesterday. They were providing food to hungry civilians in the middle of a war. They were brave and selfless. The deaths are a tragedy. He goes on later. Even more tragically, this is not a standalone incident. This conflict has been one of the worst in recent memory in terms of how many aid workers have been killed. This is a major reason why distributing humanitarian aid in Gaza has been so difficult, because Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers trying to deliver desperately needed help to civilians. Incidents like yesterday simply should not happen. Israel has also not done enough to protect civilians. The United States has repeatedly urged Israel to de-conflict their military operations against Hamas with humanitarian operations in order to avoid civilian casualties. The United States will continue to do all we can to deliver humanitarian assistance to Palestinian civilians in Gaza through all available means. I will continue to press Israel to do more to facilitate that aid. And we're pushing hard for an immediate ceasefire as part of a hostage deal. I have a team in Cairo working on this right now. This is full of evil. Full of evil.
It's full of evil. You know what, Mark? It is full of evil, but not in the way you think. It's full of evil because those are a bunch of empty words. And he's not going to cut off the money, and he's not going to cut off the weapons, and he's not going to sanction Israel, and he's not going to bring up Netanyahu on war crimes charges. That's why it's evil. It's not evil because he's too tough on Israel. He's being too mean to the war criminals. God, I hate these people so much. I told you guys, with this, what has happened in Gaza, what that has shown me is that you don't have to scratch too deep beneath the surface for some people to come out and be like, I'm basically a Nazi. I'm basically a Nazi. I love war crimes. I'm okay with killing civilians. I'll lie and say it's not happening. or I'll defend it, but I'm the Nazi guy. That's me. That's what this has shown me.
He decoupled the release of the hostage from the ceasefire in the UN resolution, in which he directed his UN ambassador to vote present or to abstain. So that's a lie, number one. Number two, the only...
What Mark is not going to tell you is that this so-called ceasefire that Israel's demanding lasts for 6 weeks. So it's, hey, give up all the hostages, and then we're going to go right back to genociding you in 6 weeks. Why would they agree to that? Why would anybody agree to that? Why would they sign their own death warrant for a temporary pause? He doesn't tell you that, does he?
Country in Gaza that is ensuring or trying to the delivery of food and medicine to Gaza civilians is Israel.
Not Egypt. They've blocked 70% of the aid, you fucking liar. They've blocked 70% of the aid. And yeah, Israel's being so humanitarian to the people they're massacring.
Not the United States, not Jordan, not Iran, Israel. And I hate to tell Biden this, the IDF is not the Peace Corps. You want to send the Peace Corps over there? Go ahead. Hamas is stealing up to 70% of all food and fuel that's coming into Gaza.
Total lie. Total fucking lie. There's 30,000 Hamas members. There's 2.3 million people in Gaza. The idea Hamas is hoarding all of it, that's just not true. But this is all they have. All they have is, Hamas! You say anything. Hamas! Hamas! It's not working anymore. It's not working, Mark. Lower your fucking voice, you freak.
He knows that. We all know it. And then they're selling what they leave over at some exorbitant price to their own citizens.
So do you understand? The problem is Palestinians price gouging other Palestinians. The problem is not the medieval siege that Israel imposed on all of Gaza to punish 2.3 million people for the actions of Hamas. The problem is not Israel cutting off the food, the fuel, the water, the electricity. The problem is that the Palestinians who have goods are overcharging other Palestinians.
They're firing artillery into their own hospitals. They're killing their own citizens.
They're firing artillery into their own hospitals. You know what he's referring to? The first time that there was a hospital that was attacked, very high-profile incident, there was a debate going on. Was it a misfired Palestinian rocket, or was it Israel doing it? That was the debate that was going on. And then, since then, we've had, look right here, 301 healthcare facilities have been hit, including 29 hospitals, 69 clinics, and 203 ambulances. And he says, they're hitting their own hospitals. Even if I grant you that first one was a misfired Palestinian rocket, which I don't at all, what about the other 28 hospitals that were hit? What about the planned demolition of schools? What about the assassination campaign around the Al-Shifa hospital complex where 13 children were deliberately targeted? God, he's just a liar. He's just a fucking liar.
Biden doesn't mention this once, and he continues to use... throughout the day, throughout the weeks, the lies from the Hamas terrorists about the number of civilians that are killed. No matter how many statisticians and experts tell him he's wrong, he doesn't care.
There are no statisticians and experts telling Biden that he's wrong about the number of Palestinian casualties. The UN, every other human rights organization has it at about 30,000. That's what Biden says. He's not wrong. If anything, that number's a low count. I just showed you the... Euromed monitor numbers, they have a higher death number because they include the people who've been under the rubble for weeks as dead. Look, it drives me crazy that here we have a situation where Biden is aiding and abetting a genocide. That's what he's doing. He's aiding and abetting a genocide. He's funding Israel. He's looking the other way as they do all these war crimes. Then he does this PR offensive where he wags his finger and says, I don't agree with all those kids you carpet bombed. And he's trying to dupe people into thinking, I'm not okay with what they're doing. No, if you really weren't okay with it, you cut off the weapons immediately and sanction them. That's what you would do. But you're not doing that. So you are okay with it. That's the real problem. What does Mark Levin come out and say? The problem is that Joe Biden is now pro-Hamas and anti-Israel. How are you supposed to have a reasonable political debate with people like this? It's literally not possible. The guy's just a genocidal freak. So not only does he want Biden to arm and fund the genocide, not only does he want that, he also wants him to cheerlead Israel as they, on a daily basis, carpet bomb children and women. That's what he wants. He wants them to say, hooray, as they attack all vital infrastructure. As they bomb schools and hospitals and mosques and churches and marketplaces and factories and homes. And that's what he wants. Disgusting, vile human being. The fact that this is allowed on corporate media, but if somebody were to go on any of these outlets and say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, there'd be an outrage. There'd be an outcry. There'd be outrage. And they would say, fire that person. But this guy can do his little fucking genocidal screed, and nobody bats an eyelash. This is the only place you're hearing about it, I'm sure. Loathsome and deplorable. So, multimillionaire Jesse Waters went on the PBD podcast, and he gave us this incredible moment. Watch this.
If you're making $20 an hour to work at a fast food restaurant, right? Is that six figures? Are you making
No.
Are you a fucking moron? $20 an hour you think is six figures? Jesus Christ, what a dumbass. Holy fuck, he's not smart. That's it. Like, a lot of these people who are on TV, they're not only bad at their jobs, they're all like just fucking idiots, just total fucking morons. You didn't know that? Oh my God.
Is that six figures? Are you making
No.
40, 40 grand.
50, 40 grand. 50 is just 2x it and add a few zeros.
Yeah. Okay. So
40K a year.
Okay.
Full time.
40K a year. Yeah. So, and then if your husband or wife is also there, you're making $100,000 as a family.
Okay. They just established it'd be 40 grand a year. Then they say, if your wife works there, that would be 80. Not 100. 80, not 100. If you think that's not a big difference, send me a check for the difference there. Send me a check for 20,000, Jesse. Because that's not a big difference, right? So two people working full-time at a fast food restaurant would be 80, and that's pre-taxes, right? And the 20 is in only the absolute places that pay the most, like California. And by the way, rent there is incredibly high. Everything there is incredibly expensive. So an actual living wage in California, get this, is $27 an hour. So still on one salary, that wouldn't be enough to live. On the two, you could get by, but it'd be fucking tight, man. You would not be living in luxury. That's for damn sure. You'd barely be able to get by. Barely. Okay, let's keep it going.
40K a year. Yeah. So, and then if your husband or wife is also there, you're making $100,000 as a family.
Sure.
Both working at McDonald's?
80 yes. grand. 80
that, that is, okay, that's crazy. That is crazy, because that job really doesn't require much. So it's inflating the entire, mm-hmm. Labor sector.
And the Happy Meal.
And the Happy Meal.
Unhappy, unhappy. Which,
Jesse, let me explain something to you. You are a pampered little prick frat boy who makes tens of millions, probably, a year for running your mouth on TV and talking about how much you dislike liberals and Democrats and women and black people and Muslims and every minority group under the sun. You get to go out there and give your shitty political opinions on a daily basis, and you make millions and millions of dollars to do that. You provide much less value to the system than a fast food worker does. They work harder than you. It's a more noble profession than what you're doing. He gets paid millions or tens of millions to run his mouth and give his political opinions on TV. And then he goes out, he has the nerve to go out there. His main beef here, fast food workers get paid too much money. I just told you, even in a best case example, where it's $20 an hour in California, the living wage is $27 an hour. So in other words, if it is one person, let's say they're single, one person works full time, doesn't make enough money to survive. Jesse Waters looks at that and he says, they should make less. I know you already work full time and don't make enough money to survive. I still want you to make less. I want to force you to have to get a second job or a third job. And this is usually where they chime in and they go, yeah, but the minimum wage is just for like kids in summer jobs to get a start. Turns out we have statistics on it. That's not true. Most people who make the minimum wage, that's their job. That's their job. Not everybody can get the promotion, Jesse. Not everybody could work their way up the ladder. Not everybody gave Bill O'Reilly a hand job behind Fox News Studios in order to get his spot on air. Of all the things to complain about, of all the things to be upset about, this motherfucker went on a podcast and said to hundreds of thousands of people, the problem is minimum wage workers get paid too much money. What am I supposed to do with that? And then he'll have the nerve to go out there and say, the presidential candidate I support, Donald Trump, is for the working man and the working woman. You just did a whole screed against working men and working women here. That's what you just did. You were just shitting on somebody who busts their ass and works hard for a living at a fast food place. You were just shitting on them. Then you'll pretend Trump is for the working man and woman and Biden's against them. You are clearly against the working man and working woman. Because you don't respect somebody who works at a fast food restaurant. It is immeasurable how much more good those people do than Jesse Waters. Jesse Waters is a net negative to the system. His whole job is to just make people dumber, more hateful, more in favor of the billionaire's agenda. That's his whole fucking job. Let me just say dumb, ignorant, stupid things on a daily basis and get paid millions and millions of dollars for it a year. Listen, I'm going to make this very... Anybody, including me, including other people in the new media space, the old media space, anybody who can make a living by talking, shut the fuck up. Sit this one out, okay? Sit this one out. Anybody who actually has to do some physical-ass shit to pay the bills, and in this instance, get paid less than what they need to survive, I can't, man. And anybody who works full-time should make enough money to survive. Anybody. He looks down his nose. Smug, condescending prick. He looks down his nose at people who happen to work in fast food. It's disgusting to me. It's absolutely disgusting. I mean, if these guys had their way, man, I truly wonder what percentage of the country would work jobs where they get paid total shit if he had his way. You know? To him, it's like only Wall Street douchebags who provide nothing of value, they can make millions a year. Media assholes like him who provide nothing of value, he can make millions a year. But like anybody else doing teacher, construction worker, nurse, person, guy at the bank teller, fucking fast food workers, like all those people. It's just like, I don't care if you're in debt up to your eyeballs. I don't care if you have to live under the bridge. Fuck you. Get paid less money. And by the way, final point on the idea of inflation there at the end. Look, it's just not true. We actually covered the story the other day. What was it? In-N-Out? It was at some burger place in California. They had the before and the after. Before the $20 wage, which, by the way, is not a minimum wage law. It's a sectoral bargaining law. So they all the fast food workers came together and negotiated, and that's what they got. But the difference was like 10 cents for a burger, maybe 20 cents for something else. It's fucking nothing. If you tell me you have to pay 10 cents more for your cheeseburger, but this person can now get health care, or this person makes $3 an hour more per hour, $3 an hour more per hour. That's funny. $3 more per hour. It's like, of course I'd make that trade-off. Of course. Who fucking wouldn't? Who wouldn't? Like, yeah, okay. We can all have cheap plastic shit from China and pay like a dollar for a toy for your kid. Or you can have that shit made in the US and you pay $2.50 or $3 for it and somebody gets to make a living and have a decent life. I'm definitely picking the slightly higher price with better social outcomes. These guys are just, neoliberalism has rotted their brain where it's just like, everything is a race to the bottom. Everything is the cheapest fucking thing imaginable, filled with lead paint and all sorts of garbage, some Chinese slave factory with children in it working away to try to get you this cheap plastic shit. At the end of the day, what's it all for? What's it all for? So some factory owner can get wealthy by padding his pockets because the profit margin is bigger with some Malaysian factory versus paying workers decent here. Like, what are we talking about here? No, this guy, he wants a fucking broken system is what he wants. He wants a broken system. He's complaining fast food workers get paid too much money. No. You know who gets paid too much money? You. You know who gets paid definitely not enough money? Not just fast food workers. Anybody who's actually working for a living. Jesus Christ. All right, guys. That's the show. I love you all very much. You know the drill. Everybody, please click like, click subscribe, click that bell icon so you get a notification every time a video drops. Leave a comment, whatever, all that fun stuff. Thank you to everybody who supports this show on Patreon. If you'd like to do that, that link's below. You can also tip with the thanks button on YouTube below as well. Remember, I never talk to any advertisers ever, so you guys help fund this show from the ground up. I can't thank you enough. Please consider doing that if you haven't yet. And I'll talk to you guys later. Everybody have a great rest of your day.